They had it since 1904, and the first ex-laymen was a man called Dr. Cook, Philip H. Cook. And there is a Philip H. Cook Professor of Radiology in Boston, in one of the medical schools, I don't know which one.
Are they related?
Yeah, he left all his money to have a professorship called after him. He was a bachelor, and I knew him when he was older, and he had just retired when I got to Worcester. And they have had X-ray since 1904. Why they started so late? Because it's discovered in 1895, and when they started in 1904, that's 9 years. I don't know what they're waiting for. I know that when I got there first, they told me about the good old times. And they said that they sent one of the male nurses to Boston to be trained as a technician. And he came back that afternoon fully trained.
Wow, that was quick.
Sure. And the first x-ray they took was an examination of a hip of a lady. And the whole hospital ran together. They had, most of them had never seen an x-ray before, but at least they had never had one in the hospital. And after a few days, the region of the hip of that lady turned a little red, and then it got a little redder, and then it produced some bubbles, and then the skin disappeared, and they sent the technician back to Boston for further training. Those things happen. And since that time, they had a regular X-ray department. And when I came to Dr. Cook, had just resigned, and I came in as a kind of a resident. They had no title, and they had no money. But they still gave me $2,000 per year, which at that time was pretty good.
Is that when you came here in 1938?
Yeah. We had one young lady whose business it was to cut off the corners of X-ray films. Well, nowadays films go through a machine. You ever seen a film get developed? Well, in the olden days, of course, they had to put them in frames and then put them in a solution, 2 minutes, and then water, and then fix it. And so, and the corners had to be cut. And that lady, Mary was her name, Mary Jones, I remember her. They gave her $7 a week for doing that. And at that time, that was sufficient for her to keep that position. And as time went on, Dr. Langell, who was the successor of Dr. Cook, died. And then there was another one, Dr. Dumas, and he died too. And then I took over and chief for a while, and then I resigned, and the hospital was closed. Okay, now you ask me any questions you want.
This was all at City Hospital?
That's all City Hospital, yeah. I was working in Rutland too, and at the State Hospital, but my main position.
What are the changes that you had to go through when you came here to...
Well, one thing is to try to learn some English, because nobody knew German. A lot of people knew French, and since I am fluent in French, that was a great help. And there was especially the chief technician, Mr. Galland, who in French is Galland. He took me under his wings, and whatever They said to me, he translated into French. Sometimes he knew the answers, and he said, oui, and I said, yes. And so they had the impression I knew something, but I didn't understand. So I tried to learn English as far as I could, and then later on, of course, I got familiar with technology and technical terms, which were different. And there were, of course, other radiologists here in Worcester. There was Dr. O'Connor, who was at St. Vincent Hospital, who was unbelievably charming to me. And although he didn't understand me, and I didn't understand, after a while we got along. And Dr. Bill Elliott, who was at Memorial Hospital chief, was very helpful and very nice. And so that developed. It's 50 years. Ask me more questions.
Sure. What was City Hospital like when you arrived?
It was an excellent hospital. They had one resident and numerous interns. Resident ran the whole thing with an iron fist, killery, and he was excellent and friendly. And some of the interns are still doctors around here, some of them retired. One had his picture in the papers this morning.
Oh, which one?
Dr. Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still friendly with them. Well, they were kids when I came here. Now they have gray hair or no hair. And if you wait long enough, they all get older. No offense meant.
Mm-hmm.
And the techniques, well, the machines were not very good. Even in Boston, they had they were behind what I was accustomed to do when I still was in Germany. But later on, of course, they caught up. Well, you don't know the details, but problem if you produce X-rays with an X-ray tube is that a large amount of the energy is transformed into heat, which we can use. And if you have a focus which gets overheated, it burns and the tube is gone. Therefore, there are all kinds of technical changes, especially the edge 1-2, where the anode rotates, then only a different part gets involved. And this I was familiar with, and when I bought some second-hand equipment to start my own office, I had it at the first rotating anode tube in Worcester, and people in Boston didn't have it much earlier than I. So some technical things, they were behind here. But of course, the diagnostic ability. See, you have a great doctor. The technical part is important, but not the most important part. You can be offered the best equipment. If you're not a good doctor, it doesn't help you. And if you're a good doctor, they might be, you might get along without. One of the problems with radiology is that the machines get more and more expensive. CAT scan machines and similar things, they cost in the millions. And that we have the problems now to cut down on medical expenses. The machines get more expensive, you can't help that. The olden days, the equipment for a doctor was a stethoscope.
Yeah.
That's all he had, and that's all he could use, and they made very good diagnosis. And then there was some guy by the name of Paul Ehrlich, and he put some dye on the blood smear, and all of a sudden, some of the white cells turned blue, took the alkaline stuff in, others turned red. Probably eosinophils, one in between had neither one were financial bills. And those things, this was before our time, obviously at the end of last century or early this century. But before that, doctor looked in the microscope, he just saw blobs, but he didn't know whether they were neutrophils or lymphatic cells or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
For that you need inventions, machines.
Why did you choose to become a radiologist?
Oh, I was interested in physics even in high school. Like so often you have one teacher who influences you. And it was even so that when I was in high school, it was one of the kids shot himself in the hand. And our physics professor said, let's take an X-ray. So he went into the storeroom and got an old tube out, which he put up there. Then he put a transformer up. And then he put voltage on. And then he darkened the room. And then he had a fluoroscope. And there was a hand with the bullet in. So I said to myself, that's what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I was still in high school at that time. It's often so that some personal connections get you. And he was an excellent teacher, what we learned about physics. And then during the medical school, there were fabulous people. There was a guy by the name of Einstein. He wasn't in Frankfurt. But his best friend was in Frankfurt, and he was teaching, and I took a course from him. And there was a man in Heidelberg, where I studied too, by the name of Leonard, and he was a Nobel Prize physicist, and he influenced me. You see, the studying in Europe, at least at that time, was different from what you here do.
How so?
Well, I studied in three medical schools, four medical schools, Frankfurt, Heidelberg, Kiel, and Freiburg. If I had had more money, maybe I'd not rich at that time, I would have studied in 10 medical schools.
How much time did you spend in each school?
Semester. In winter, I always stayed at a local medical school because it was too expensive to get a room. Dormitories don't exist, you have to get them. But I still I went to Freiburg because it's in the mountains and you can ski. And I went to Kiel, which is at the Baltic Sea, where you can swim in summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Heidelberg because that had a reputation for one of the oldest universities in Europe, almost as old as the Paris University and things like that. You want to have been a student at Heidelberg. And in addition, if you get different attitudes, different professors, wonderful. Sometimes we liked our professors, and if one professor took a job somewhere else, we followed him. But that you go to one medical school, oh God forbid, that was the most boring thing we could even imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you get to a medical school? You make your high school, finish your high school, and take your final examination. And the next step, of course, college doesn't exist. They don't have that. 18, you go to medical school.
For how long?
5 years.
Five.
Then you have 1 year of internship, and then you can put your shingle out. A lot of the things which probably are taught in high school there might be taught later on. We had a rather radical high schools. We had 8 hours of Greek and 8 hours of Latin a week. in addition to math and physics and German and history and French and English and whatever you want. That was a top school.
Sounds like it.
And you're 18 when you're through, and then you go to medical school. How you get in? You go to your local university, and you have your diploma, the abiturium. You know Latin? No.
Yeah.
No. Abiturium means to go away, and abiturium means to go away exam. You go in there, and the guy said, you here for the first time? Yes. Write your name there. Then the next guy said, what do you want to study? Say, medicine. Write your name over there. Go in.
That's it?
That's it. And if you want to change to the next university, you collect your papers where they tell you that you have done anatomy 1, physiology 1, and chemistry 1, and physics 1. That's the first semesters. You get those, and then you sit in a train, you go to Heidelberg. And there's the same thing. They say, you're here for the first time? Yes, write your name there. Are you a beginner? No, I'm here. First semester. Then you write your name, and that's the way it goes. But of course, the medical school are all owned by the state, by the federal government. They have the same curriculum. If you are a little careful, you miss nothing. I missed anatomy of the brain too. In between, fell between the slots. Those things could happen. So since I never became a neurologist or a psychiatrist, I didn't need it. I studied it all by myself. And then when you are through, you take a state board examination. And then you take your MD, that's a private business. You don't get the title of MD necessarily. You can be a practicing physician without being a doctor title, as long as you have passed your state board. And then after, you have to have an internship of 1 year, and then you can do whatever you want, as far as specialization is concerned. Of course, they would again look with disfavor if you want to be a radiologist, that you start with radiology. See, I did 2-3 years of internal medicine before I went to X-ray. But in the end, you will finish your necessary training for the specialty you have chosen.
How long is the X-ray training, that specialty training?
How long the training? Oh, I think I had my internal medicine, and they then tell you part of it is counted to a specialty, and that was about 3 years. I'm not entirely sure of that. And then I got a job at a smaller hospital. Before, I only worked at a medical school because I thought that the training would be better than if you work at a private hospital. You would have the same feeling you could be working at St. Vincent Hospital. You do. Well, where do you work?
I'm at Memorial.
Memorial.
Yeah.
And the condition under which I came here was, of course, it was never my idea to go to America. That's when Hitler, you heard of Hitler?
Yes.
When Hitler came and I lost my job, the German government at that time had all kinds of tricks. One, for instance, how could they get rid of Jewish lawyers and Jewish doctors? They just decided that they are... So they decided that doctors and lawyers and similar people are considered federal employees. And then they passed the law that Jews business cannot be a business, it's a matter of employees. It's a be everybody. What's the license? And if you lose your license, it's very difficult to make a living because you cannot work anymore. And that is turned out much worse. And they killed millions of people. It's of course something we couldn't imagine, because who could imagine that a thing like that happened? But then finally we came to this country, and the main problem here was not the medical training which I had, but the language. Because they gave you a language examination before you could take a state board. And then at that time, there were all kinds of local states who had their own license, which wasn't valid somewhere else. One of the worst states in the Union was Massachusetts, because they had some four-state medical schools in Boston and so, and nobody else wanted to recognize it. So if nobody else wants to recognize it, then Massachusetts said, "Well, we don't recognize you either." So since I passed the state board in New Jersey and in New York, when I came here, they said, "You need another state board because we don't accept that." Things have changed now, fortunately, because it was narrow-minded. They closed the small school. Middlesex College was closed. And whether they were so bad, I don't know. They still have problems. You know about the medical schools in the Caribbean? You heard about those?
Yes.
There are still things which are not 100% easy, but it's much better than it was at that time. So after I'd been here for a while, I'd taken this state board in Boston and in New Jersey. I took a state board here in Boston, no, in New York. New York and New Jersey. So I took a state board here in Boston. By that time, I was, of course, much more fluent in the language. And those language examinations were somewhere ridiculous. In New York, for instance, they gave you words, difficult words, like philosophy, analysis, and similar things, which, of course, everybody in the whole world knows those terms. You don't have to know English, but that's what they ask. And then in New Jersey, I know there was a sentence which I had to correct in the language examination. It runs this way: "Lay down, Fido." So I didn't know what Fido is.
Yeah.
How should I know what Fido is? It's an American dog's name.
Yeah.
Who in Europe knows what Fido is? So I was supposed to correct it from lay down to lie down, which is the correct form, which I did. And then I stuck with Fido. So I wrote it. I thought it might be misprint and should be "if I do." Yeah, lie down if I do. That's not a bad sentence. Well, I passed it.
Okay.
I passed the examination.
Did you live in New York or New Jersey before you came to Massachusetts?
Yes, New York.
Uh-huh.
I have a brother in New York who was instrumental of getting me over here. And I lived in New York for 5 months until I got a job here. It's a city hospital. The Beth Israel Hospital had a group of doctors who were interested in finding positions for guys like me. And I went there, and talked to them as far as I could.
Yeah.
And they said they wanted to try to find out, and one day they found out that there was an opening at the Worcester City Hospital. So they called City here, and they called me back and said, if you want a job, just call them up. So I came here, superintendent and gentleman with him, and I asked them whether they want to see my papers, proof of training, proof of exam, and things like that. So I said, no, thank you. I said, you can't give me a job without, see, I might be a vacant. No, we don't want to see. You're highly recommended. So I said to myself, how can they hire a guy in a big hospital on his words? I could be the biggest faker, those things have. So I said, again, Kent, I showed you, I have here the papers, and here's the English translation. Oh, sir, do you have it in English? I said, yes. They didn't want to admit that they wouldn't understand my certificates and things like that. So I gave it to them to study it. But you see, there are difficulties everywhere. Sure. They didn't want to offend me, and they didn't want to me to know that they didn't know what my papers said. And of course they didn't know any German. I didn't expect it. Mm-hmm. Oh, later when I came here, well, I grew up in Belgium, and that's why I speak French. Mm-hmm. I went to school there, where they teach French and Flemish, which is kind of Dutch dialect. So I grew up trilingual. And I added some Italian later. Only English I didn't add. This was added to me. So I know a five-language basis, which is very enjoyable. It opens the world for you, and if you travel in Europe, you ever been to Europe?
No.
Oh, you should. Mm. But learn some language. You get much more out of it. See, of course, while I was in Europe, I traveled there. When I came here, I came back there, France, Italy, Germany, Switzerland. Mm. That opens your... Sometimes you're surprised. I know I went to a hospital in Venice, and my Italian was very poor, and the guy, doctor showed me on, was very uncooperative, and he showed me a test tube with a little red soup in, and he said, la reazione di Wassermann.
What is that?
Wassermann reaction. You know Wassermann? Yeah. The ordinary syphilis test. That's what he had. And it was an old cloister. Some of the hospitals are a little different there. Here, the hospital is built in a hospital, right away. Okay, more questions.
How were you received by patients here when you...
Oh, patients fabulous.
Fabulous?
Doctors fabulous. They were all really nice. Mm. The only ones who were dissatisfied was the newspaper. They wanted an extensive philosophy of Nazism by me. So I said, my parents still live over there. If I say something bad about the Germans, and they find out, they might kill my parents. So they were dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, doctors were nice, and the patients, very nice. The patients were a little different at that time. Many Italian people were around here who spoke no English. And you had to really talk Italian with them. There were a few Frenchmen who spoke no English. There are quite a few Jewish people who spoke no English. And now everybody speaks English. And they all learned it when they were small. Immigration principles have changed, except the Spanish, but Hispanic people are in the same situation as the English, as the Italians and the Jewish people and the French people were at the time when I came here. We had very few Negroes around here. There was one doctor at City Hospital who was black. He was Dr. Goldsberry. His son is a big man here. His wife works for the city. And Dr. Goldsberry, we became fast friends. And the situation of the black doctors was very difficult at that time. The prejudices were just unbelievable. We had medical society here, had Dr. Hinton from Boston. At that time, the Hinton test was the main test for syphilis. I don't know if it's still used, no?
No.
Anyway, he came here and addressed the medical society. And then they had supper and everything together, and then he said goodbye, take the bus back to Boston. So it went to the bus stop and no bus. Whether he missed it, I don't know. Anyway, he had to stay in Worcester. He went to the main hotel, Bancroft Hotel,
mm-hmm.
and he said, I'd like a room for the night. So they looked at him and said, we don't take you. So I said, listen, I addressed the medical society here in Worcester, and I missed my bus. I have to sleep here. So the guy at the Bancroft said, I'm sorry, we don't accept black people. So he did something wise. He called up the president of the medical society. I said, listen, you got me here. Oh, he said, come to my house. Of course, that was ridiculous because he was the main attraction of the whole evening.
Mm-hmm.
So he stayed here with him. And I talked to Dr. Goldsberry, who was planning an automobile tour from here to Chicago with overnight stops with people he knew. He could not go to drive across the country to live in a hotel that didn't exist. And Massachusetts was not as bad as other states, part of South, and New Hampshire and similar states also had restrictions for blacks and for Jews.
Yes,
yeah,
so I was wondering, did you feel the prejudice also as a Jew?
Well, I had no difficulty because I didn't do anything expensive traveling because I had no money. But of course I knew that there were catalogs which said churches nearby. Yeah, that's one thing. One day we went to New Hampshire and we stopped at a very nice place, a small place, and we got very friendly with the owners who always had supper with us. And they had us promise that we'd come back, and they gave us all their literature, and I looked at churches nearby. So I knew they didn't know that I was Jewish.
Uh-huh.
But if they had known it, I don't know. Anyway, we didn't go back. But things have changed since, because if somebody does that, he goes to jail. It's an offense. You cannot reject a black person, a Jewish person, or a Spanish person, or whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's the law. So there we have had a lot of progress in this country. And medicine, of course, then shortly after we came, 38, 39, the war started between Germany, England, France, Poland. And then Pearl Harbor came, it was 41. Suddenly I became an enemy alien because I was a German citizen, of course. That means that I was restricted to Worcester and had to write to the Attorney General, or God knows who it was, for permission when I want to leave Worcester, which you got. It was just formality.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do anything on this side of the country as what they did with the Japanese in California. You
yes.
know about that.
Yes.
With the Japanese, they do ahead of time, he's just a spy, and put him away. Although those people were native born, were citizens and things like that. But that was based on fear.
Sure.
You know, if you run to a dog and the dog is afraid of you, he's going to bite you.
Yeah.
Even if you know that you mean well, the same thing was with the Japanese. They were just scared. And the Japanese themselves knew, of course, that Americans learn no foreign language. Nobody speaks anything but English.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the things which they did, secret messages were given in plain Japanese because they knew no American understanding. But they, of course, had Americans who were of Japanese extract, and they helped with the secret messages. The Germans had a very complicated secret code, which we found out, fortunately. And as far as the Germans were concerned, of course, I still had my parents over there. And we got my brother was a citizen. He got him out of quota, and he got him back here by the end of 1940. The rest of my family were all killed. Two brothers of my father's with their wives and children. Two sisters of my father's. One sister made it to Shanghai. Two sisters were taken to a concentration camp and killed. My mother's sister didn't make it out either, and we know that she also was killed. So we always consider ourselves fortunate to be here. And as time went on, we became citizens. I think it takes 5 years. And I have a daughter who was also born over there. And son born here is. He can be president, but he has no wishes.
No.
He has no wishes. He could, but I could be president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ask me.
You said that you were in the medical society.
Here.
Here. What other organizations did you become involved in?
Oh, Lay Society, Massachusetts, and well, that's practically all, of course. I belong to a museum and to religious groups and whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Integrated, they call it.
Yeah. Well-rounded.
Hmm?
You're well-rounded, too.
I tried. Mm-hmm. Had time enough.
Mm-hmm.
The only really bad thing which happened to me is that they closed City Hospital. City Hospital had monetary problems. It would lead too far if I tell you. They got, for a long time, Medicare or similar organization paid them twice by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And no genius found that out until one day, I think it, over a year later, they found out. So they said they had to give it all back. So they found out that they had been paid twice, and they had to give the money back, and the city just didn't have it. Why they had to close the hospital, I don't know. Some of those things are local politics, which I don't participate.
Mm-hmm.
And then they founded the medical school here. This was a wonderful thing. and I wasn't sure whether it's good for Worcester or bad for Worcester, or whether it would have been smarter to do it in Springfield, since we have so many medical schools in Boston. Anyway, I was not participating anyway, and the radiologist, Dr. Hawes, didn't have an X-ray department yet, so he came. They were building it, so he came with his students to City Hospital. And I didn't want to know anything about it, so I always left earlier before he came. I know he came to the X-ray department.
Mm-hmm.
But like things happened. One day, there I was sitting in my office, and a gentleman comes in and said, "I'm Dr. Hawes."
"Oh."
"I don't know you." So we sat down and we talked. And so he said that he's starting a new X-ray department, and that I don't know how many rooms. They had many rooms. It was all beautiful. And then he said, "Won't you join?" He said to me. So I said, "Why?" So he said, "Well," he said, "I didn't take your name out of a hat." That's what it was. Somebody had talked to him about it. He said, "We want you to teach there."
Yeah.
And so I said, "Well, it's very honorable." And I came over there and signed all kinds of papers. And then they wrote me back that I would be accepted as an associate professor, which I am. He continued doing that. Dr. Hawes retired and died. All what's left of him is, of course, the library, which is called after him, and the chief technician. All others are gone. Dead. So chief technician and I are the only remnants of the early day of the X-ray department.
Mm.
At that time it was very generous. I had two offices, one with files and one with viewing boxes. And after a while they told me that I should have one office only. Now I just have a file, and most of the doctors who work there every day are two in one room.
They're crowded.
So it was a beautiful time when everything was wide open, and I could do whatever I wanted. It's gone. But still, so if you go there and ask about me, they're all friends. Because except for Dr. Burke, one gentleman, I'm the oldest and the longest person. And I've got a gown with my name on it. That's wonderful. It has to be washed. And I have students. When students are working there sometime, nobody works there. You never work there, they say.
No.
I don't know how they organize it. It's not my problem, but if I. They are students, they give me a ring, and we have a good time together, because you talk about all the things you don't learn in X-ray. You know how medicine is nowadays. You don't start with a simple thing, you get the big thing right away. When you see a patient, you don't see him as a beginner, but as if you know all about it.
Yes.
It's the same thing in X-ray. Ask anybody about take a 6-foot X-ray of the chest. Nobody knows. And you don't know what a pocket diaphragm is.
Yeah.
What secondary X-rays are. why you cannot take a film of the abdomen in bed, why you cannot take a 6-foot film in bed, because the ceiling is too low.
Yeah, well,
you just don't do it. You see, portable chest wheels are not 6 foot. Because in addition to that, you need a big machine because you want to take a chest film in a tenth of a second, 20th of a second, 50th of a second. The shorter, the better. Otherwise, the heart moves.
Mm-hmm.
You can hold your breath, but you can't stop your heart.
Sure.
If you hit it just where the heart does this, unless the film is short, it's very short, you get a lousy film. And if you use a technique like x-raying a patient and you don't know what the technique is, you're in trouble. I mean, not always. A lot of people know nothing about x-rays or about ultrasound. They just look at it and they know what it is. Or they are told what it is. But you're always better off if you know what it's all about. Just like you start with anatomy. I had a friend who was a psychiatrist who told me, when I was a student, it took me weeks to learn the carpal bones. I'm a psychiatrist. That knowledge was never, never used by me. I had to learn the carpal bones, but I never used it. So I said, that makes no difference. You're studying medicine and you know the carpal bones, you can not, you go to be a lousy psychiatrist because you know how the hand moves. A lot of things you learn which you don't use ever. All about obstetrics. If you are an internist, you don't have to know anything about obstetrics. Yeah, who cares?
Why not?
That's correct. It belongs to it. Obstetrics is as much a part of medicine as nephrology and cardiology and urology and things like that. You have to learn the whole thing. I just quote that psychiatrist who was furious that he wasted time learning the carpal bones. Sure, that belongs to medicine. That's why I point out the technical things in X-ray. That's part of medicine. If you don't know what it is, if you don't know what a pocket diaphragm is, that in every table a pocket diaphragm is built in.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot use it for a portable film because you have just the X-ray cassette. Why you use a cassette and all those things. That's what we talk with the students, and they get a lot out of it because I teach them only things which they don't learn anywhere else. And give you an example. What do you give a patient if you want to do a GI series?
A diet.
Yeah. What is it? Oh, it's called barium.
Barium swallow.
Yeah. What's barium? Why is it called barium?
Heavy metal.
Well, how do you know it's heavy?
Learned it in chemistry.
No, because barium means heavy.
Barium means heavy.
Barometer. You use a barometer to measure the heaviness of the earth,
mm-hmm.
of the atmosphere. Baris is a Greek word, means heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You ever had a glass full of barium, what a patient drinks into your hand?
Yeah.
You'll be surprised how heavy that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's barium. That's, you have to know that. No, you don't have to know it. But it's much more enjoyable if you know those things. Other thing is morphine. What's morphine? Why it's called morphine? Anything to do with amorphous? Sure, same word.
Mm-hmm.
Amorphous means no shape. And morphine, if you inject it, you see shapes. That's why it's called morphine. And you don't know Greek in school either?
Not Greek.
Latin?
I had a little bit of Latin.
Good. Well, there were two brothers in Greek mythology. One was Death, and his brother was Sleep. Death is called Thanatos. You know, euthanasia?
Yes.
And Sleep is called Morpheus, because you see shapes in dream. That's why morphine is called morphine.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you can continue by the mile, yeah? Nobody knows why the clavicle is called clavicle.
No, I don't.
You play piano?
Yes.
You know well tempered clavier by Bach?
No, I don't.
Clavichord?
Yeah.
Clavichord. What's a clavichord? Clavichord. The keys. It's a keyboard instrument.
That's where the name came from.
It looks like a key. You learn French?
No.
French is called clé. Or clef.
Oh.
Clef. It's key. It looks like an old key.
Yeah.
You don't have to know that. But so much nicer if you know what it means. Yeah?
Yes.
Why is the radius called radius? Because it radiates around the ulna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it radiates around the ulna. That's why it's called radius. All those things not to know is a manco, I think. That's my attitude. That's a more... It's not real medicine. But a guy who is interested in medicine should know what he's talking about.
Sure.
If we don't know it, who else is going to know it?
Not the patients.
You know what anatomy means?
Mm-hmm.
Tommy, what is tomography? Cut.
Cutting.
And arm is up. To cut up, that's what the anatomist does.
Mm-hmm.
Without cutting open, you know no anatomy.
True.
Is it important to know? I think it is.
Yes.
And this is something which I emphasize when I have students, if they want to hear it.
You work with residents that are studying to become...
I started with residents. But while I was seeing patients to make a living, they were sitting in the library studying. And it didn't take very long when they knew much more about the literature than I knew. Hey, that's what you said. I read that last article in the Yellow Journal, and so I said, I didn't. They did.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I said, you people know too much. Yeah, so I said, switched to students. And residents, I started with residents. Mm-hmm. Then what I was hired to do, but they are much too good. Next question.
What do you think have been the greatest advancements that you've seen in radiology or in medicine?
Well, radiology itself is the greatest, one of the greatest advancements.
Mm-hmm.
And the antibiotics are fantastic advancements in reconstructing of bones and joints, what the orthopedics do, artificial hips, artificial knees, fantastic. A lot of things have happened. But the antibiotics might be the greatest. Then, as far as the advantages in this century is, of course, physics, with people like Einstein and Michelson. You know the Michelson effect? Michelson is the first American to ever get a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Was by the end of this century. But then the invention, detection of Martin Rees, and then that fabulous lady, Maria Sklodowska. You know her?
No.
She married a Mr. Curie.
Oh, yes, Madame Curie.
So she accepted that name. She should have done it.
She should have
Maria
kept her own name.
It's the only first who got the Nobel Prize twice. The only person whose daughter also got the Nobel Prize. Mm. That is something which might never occur again. Like Maria Sklodowska.
Sklodowska.
Yeah, that's Polish. I don't know Polish. She's changed it clearly, but I'll be told that to her dying days, when she used to add some figures, she did it in Polish. Mm-hmm. That's the way she learned it. I do it in German too.
Yeah.
That's the way I learned it.
Do you think in German or do you think in English?
How do I know? I don't know. They asked me that too. But of course, basically, you don't have the time to translate. And, well, I have some visitors now. They were here this afternoon. They come from Switzerland. But they simply speak either French or German. And then I don't have to translate either. But if I read a book, and you ask me, that's a French book, do you read it in French or in English? I wouldn't know. I wouldn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Poetry, of course, I would remember. Poetry, I had a great difficulty. Still have with English poetry. Very, very, very difficult.
Why?
I didn't grow up with that. German folk songs. La Fontaine, Fable de La Fontaine. All those things are very, very current. Easy. English is difficult. I mean, don't mean Shakespeare. I mean poetry. And, next question.
You enjoy reading?
Great oh, sure.
Yes.
But also great things in life.
Yeah. Is there any particular author or poet that you...
No, anytime. The last one I read today was Homer. The Odyssey, you heard
yes.
about?
Yes.
Ever read it?
Yes, I love that too.
You do too, that's wonderful.
Yes, that was great.
Why don't you learn Greek? It's much better in Greek.
Much better.
Because you see the hexameters in which it's written are unnatural to the English language, unnatural to the German language, and natural to the Greek. And Greek is still spoken to. There's a Greek minister who lives next door. His service is still in Greek. They use the same letters. And they use most of the same words. Although the New Testament Greek is of course much later than Homer and much later than Plato and is not as elegant as Plato and Aristotle and similar people. But still Greek, it still has the same alphabet. And they have the tradition because they come from Greece.
Sure.
Yeah.
So how much time do you spend teaching now and what else do you do?
Oh, in summer I do nothing.
In summer?
Yeah, I have family who live in New Hampshire, some grandchildren, and we go there next week, or we go to stay all through August, and there's also a group who is interested, mainly a Jewish group, and I talk to them about, like the alphabet is something which is close to me because it's Hebrew originally. And Hebrew the words alpha, beta, gamma, delta mean something. Greek they don't. But be very careful what I say to you.
Yes?
You may have it all now. Next question.
Next question. Well? Was there anything that you found different here in Worcester or here in the United States that you disagreed with, like the practices in medicine
discover that the ethics of medicine in Worcester were fabulous. Only at that time when we started, of course, abortions were illegal. And were still done. And occasionally they caught some doctor who did it here. But it was, of course, forbidden.
What happened to the doctor?
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember. But you can look at this. Fines, prisoner, God knows what. Mm-hmm. He couldn't do it. It's considered a kind of murder.
Yeah.
And still, the abortions here in Worcester, I don't think you do any at the medical school.
Not at UMass. They're done.
And
they are done at Memorial.
At Memorial, they still do. I'm not in the picture because it's far from my field. And since we have ultrasound, I don't come in anymore. But I just mentioned this afternoon that one day there was a very nice, very pretty young lady brought into my office by her sister, who was a patient of mine. And she told me she came from Germany, and she's been here now for a month, and she doesn't feel good. And she vomits and things like that. And my sister had been a patient of mine. Could I look at her sister? So I said, why don't we take an x-ray? Which we did. There was a baby's head.
Oh.
No ultrasound existed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But when the baby's head was that big, it was calcified, ossified. And that was 100% diagnosis of pregnancy.
Sure.
You don't like to do it because I don't like to hit unborn babies with x-rays.
Yeah.
But at that time they did a lot of pelvimetry, which I think was ridiculous. The only good thing about pelvimetry is that if a baby is not in head presentation, you take pictures of the pelvis. If it's in head presentation, take care of the pelvis, the sex organs are high up in the abdomen, and you don't hit them. But otherwise, we had very little to do with it. But occasionally, you find a pregnancy is the reason why they vomit.
Mm-hmm.
Except that a girlfriend of mine one day was very upset. She was driving in a bus and had to be standing. Was all busy, all taken. She vomited, and everybody laughed.
That's
not
funny.
Well, they presumed she was pregnant.
Oh.
Had morning sickness. So she said to me, why did everybody laugh when I vomited? So I explained it to her. Oh, she said, of course I'm not pregnant, she said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question.
Huh?
Ethically,
how about the ethics?
Yeah. Yeah, ethically, I think everything was way above. There were, of course, sometime affairs which were peculiar. There was one lady who went to Hanuman Hospital, and she liked those gowns, and she stole them. Took them home. I had seen that lady for some reason, I don't know why. Anyway, she had one on instead of a morning robe in the kitchen. In the morning, caught on fire. She died. They sued Hanuman Hospital.
No, really?
Yeah. And they got money.
Oh, they won?
Yeah. And just peculiar cases that weren't here sometime. And occasionally I went to court for spine fusions or things like that as an expert. But that has nothing to do with ethics. It's just law.
Why would you go to court for? How?
Oh, actually it's part of if you have a malpractice suit, or if something was overdone or overlooked, or if the lawyer feels that X-ray shows something, then they have an expert and so they can get me. But that's very rare. Otherwise, my business in court is negligible.
What were some of the most memorable things that you saw with your X-rays that excited you or stand out in your mind?
Well, there are some things which... See, basically X-ray is an anatomical technique and teaches you about anatomical changes. But sometimes you have non-anatomical lesions, psychological problems, things like that, which occurs in X-ray. There's always one case which I remember. There was an elderly lady, she died now. Quite a while. Her daughter is elderly now, and her granddaughter was a classmate of my daughter's. And she came with a terrible story from Boston. She had had a hypothyroidism and had a partial thyroidectomy, which didn't help. She was doing this and her hair was falling out.
Sure.
And so she went to Dr. Leahy, who was the chief of the Leahy Clinic, and said to her, you were not well operated on. They left too much of the thyroid in. I suggest we take the rest out. Which they did. And after the operation.
Still shaking.
So he said, perhaps I left something, and he operated on her a second time.
Mm-hmm.
So she had three operations for her thyroid. And then she came back to Worcester, and her doctor in Worcester called me up and said to me, that's a terrible case, we cannot operate on her again. She still has hypothyroidism. And I don't know how she got it. Oh, he said, I don't know. Would you think to put some X-rays on it? At that time, they didn't have radioactive iodine, which is the same thing. So I've been doing that before, often treating hypothyroidism with deep X-ray therapy with good results.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, if you are careful, not much can go wrong. So she came, put her under the machine, started the machine, technician did it, and the technician said to me, something wrong. I said, what? I get no X-rays out, just noise. So we tried all kinds of buttons, did all kinds of noise. She said, what are we going to do? I said, turn it off. I won't tell the patient, she might get excited, she's excited, no. So she had no X-rays, just noise. So she said, come back in a week. She said, thank you. Came back a week later, a changed woman. Steady hands. Quiet. She kissed me. She said, this was the most fabulous treatment I've ever had in my life, she said. You cured me with one treatment.
That's incredible.
So I said to myself, should I tell her that I did nothing? She might get a relapse. She's cured, she's obviously cured. So I said, okay, tell me about your last week. How was the week? Oh, she said, good that you were my, was the best week I ever had in my life. So I said, what is it? and 5 daughters, she said, 4 are married, and the last one got engaged last week. End of story. Mm-hmm. I saw her later on, she broke her hip, we took some x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
True story. Her granddaughter was here to see us the other day. She said it was the most fabulous treatment she ever had in her life.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you don't need any more treatment. I send her home.
That's fantastic.
True story. That was the most impressive stories. Oh, I have other similar psychological stories. But one sweet story, perhaps that might be the last. There's a place in New Hampshire, Jeffrey, called the Ark. We used to go there every year. It's now sold, but we are still friendly with the Pagans. We used to own it. And there are 2 ducks in the pond, a male and a female. Not very shy, we swam around there, the ducks were there. And one day, there was only 1 duck, a male. So I said to Mr. Baker, what happened? Oh, he said, some hunter shot the female. So I said, that's terrible. Yes, I said, poor guy, he's all alone now. And then I saw something. We all went in for lunch, and the duck came up from the pond and sat between the cars on the parking lot, which I thought was peculiar. And then when we came out, she went back to the pond. Next day, same thing. And the bell rang and we went out, and the duck came up and sat between the cars. When he did it the 3rd time, I stayed out and watched. And he went in there, went from car to car, from 1 car. And I saw that in a big metal plate over the wheels.
Yes.
And he sat in front of that mirror image every day.
Mm.
I had tears in my eyes.
That is sweet.
A dumb duck. They married for life.
Yeah.
And they shot her. And he found her again.
Mm.
Well, I thought that belongs to one of the greatest things which I ever could imagine. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor.
It's a pleasure to have you here.